Hello and welcome to the Verity Podcast for Friday, April 19th, 2024. The only podcast that keeps on separating the fact from the narrative spin. I'm Adam Clark.
And I'm Eric Steiner. Here's a look at today's top stories. Washington sanctions entities linked to Iran's drone program.
The ruling HDZ party wins the most seats in Croatia's election.
Columbia University's president testifies about on-campus anti-Semitism.
Belgium's top court reinstates a conservative conference.
The Biden administration is sued for allegedly destroying public records.
Tesla pushes for a $56 billion pay deal for Elon Musk.
Google fires 28 workers for protesting a contract with Israel.
Hugh Grant settles a privacy case against The Sun.
9 people are charged in Canada's largest gold heist.
And the NBA banned Jonte Porter for life over a gambling scandal.
In our top story, the U.S. sanctions entities linked to Iran's drone production. And here are the facts as agreed upon by The Washington Post, The Hill, Forbes, The Business Standard, The National, and BBC News. The U.S. on Thursday imposed new sanctions on 16 individuals and 2 firms involved with Iran's drone manufacturing days after it launched an attack on Israel. U.S. Secretary Janet Yellen said the aim was to degrade and disrupt key aspects of Iran's offensive capabilities, making it harder and costlier to engage in what Yellen characterized as, quote, destabilizing behavior. Those targeted by the sanctions include executives of Mado Company, which makes engines for Iran's Shahed 131, used last weekend, and Shahed 136 drones. The U.S. has also targeted auxiliary firms of Iran's metal industry, which reportedly generates around $7 billion annually. An Iranian automaker also faces sanctions. The UK also announced sanctions against the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps' Navy and Defense Minister Mohammad Reza Ashtiani, alongside 11 others. The EU has also decided to widen its sanctions on those connected to drone manufacturing in Iran, with the intent of leveraging its efforts to, quote, isolate Iran.
Thank you for the facts, Eric. On our first story today, I'm going to start our first round of narrative spins, beginning with a pro-establishment narrative, and it's provided by the Jerusalem Post. While Western sanctions are an important step to defanging Iran's dangerous drone manufacturing programs, even more should be done. The U.S.'s previous sanctions on Iranian drone makers in 2023 prompted Russia to help Iran in this arena. Tehran's pivot towards Russia is dangerous geopolitically and allows Iran to skirt the consequences of sanctions. Western powers need to build on sanctions and target dismantling Iranian drone capabilities and the nations that enable it.
Counter that with an establishment critical narrative coming from antiwar.com. Iran's bold attack on Israel with over 300 missiles and drones, though ineffective, has posed a challenge for its Western allies to balance support for Israel with restraint. The attack may push them towards dangerous escalation, potentially triggering further conflict with Israel. The situation remains highly unpredictable and fraught with risks, and Western hegemonic powers have proved unable to dampen the escalation potential.
Our statistical friends at the Metaculous Prediction Community are going to get things started on our first story today. They think that there's a 20% chance that a state-based conflict between Israel and Iran will cause at least 1,000 deaths before 2025. News out of Croatia, where the HDZ party wins the most seats, but not the majority. Here are the facts as agreed upon by Barron's, Guardian, DW, Al Jazeera, and Politico. Croatia's ruling Democratic Union, or the HDZ party, has won 61 of the 151 assembly seats. The center-left Socialist Democrats, or the SD party, won 42 seats. The right-wing nationalist Homeland Movement secured 14, an ultra-conservative party took 11, and the Green Left won 10. While this is the HDZ's third consecutive win without a majority, the party must form a coalition government. Homeland hasn't yet said whether it would join a right-leaning or left-leaning coalition, and the SDP said it's prepared for weeks or months of talks. Prime Minister Andrei Plenkovic of HDZ has been in power since 2016, though his government has faced labor shortages, one of the lowest average monthly incomes in the Eurozone, and migration issues. HDZ seemed headed toward an easy victory until March, when left-wing populist President Zoran Milanovic broke with customs and campaigned for the SDP. A court ordered Milanovic to step down before campaigning, but he dismissed the ruling. Plenkovic has accused Milanovic of being pro-Russian due to his opposition of the EU backing Ukraine. Milanovic, meanwhile, dubbed Plenkovic as, quote, the godfather of corruption. It seems no party wishes to coalesce with the HDZ, but for the SDP to form a 71-seat coalition of its own, it will have to join hands with more than just close allies like the Green Left. Voters have seemingly distanced themselves from the HDZ amid corruption allegations, which have reportedly seen 30 ministers resign.
Adam, thank you for the facts. The first spin for this story is a left narrative coming from the Friedrich Naumann Foundation. Plenkovic has made poor decisions regarding ministerial appointments, leaving his party vulnerable to the emerging far right in the country. However, if he stops playing the, quote, who's the bigger alpha male with Milanovic, he can still bring together center-left parties to deter xenophobic anti-EU populists.
Left narratives are typically followed up with right narratives. I have one here, and it's provided by a European conservative. After dominating Croatian politics since 1991, the HDZ is showing signs of weakness. Not only has the patriotic homeland movement gained two seats, but the liberal SDP is also tired of the status quo. A significant bipartisan faction of anti-EU parties can now use their popularity to stop the EU's disastrous gender, climate, and migration policies.
The Columbia University president testifies about on-campus anti-Semitism. The facts are agreed upon by Guardian, Politico, Al Jazeera, New York Times, New York Post, and Associated Press. The House Committee on Education and the Workforce on Wednesday questioned Columbia University President Manu Shafiq over her institution's handling of anti-Semitism on campus after the October 7th Hamas attack on Israel. Shafiq was joined by Board of Trustees co-chairs Claire Shipman and David Greenwald and co-chair of the Columbia Task Force on Anti-Semitism, Professor David Scheiser. She pledged to take action steps to combat anti-Semitism and disclose the disciplinary measures implemented by the university, including suspending students for participating in anti-Semitic incidents. Shafiq described a rise in on-campus tensions following the Israel-Hamas war, including stating that some students had used anti-Semitic language that might warrant discipline. She characterized the phrase, quote, from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free, as a, quote, hurtful slogan, adding she wouldn't like to hear the slogan used on the Columbia University campus. The congressional hearing is part of a GOP-led effort to probe anti-Semitism at Ivy League campuses post-October 7th. Last December, presidents at Harvard and the University of Pennsylvania resigned after appearing at a similar hearing.
Eric, thanks for the facts. The spin's going to begin with the narrative A, and it's brought to us by CNN. University campuses in the U.S. have, in recent months, witnessed the rise of anti-Semitism. What's more worrying is the lack of condemnation from university leadership. There's never been a more important time than now to emphasize the need for unity and peaceful coexistence. Alongside taking a firm stand in solidarity to stop all forms of anti-Semitism in turbulent times, these institutions must make deep systemic changes to address an untenable spike in hate speech since October 7th.
And time continues with narrative B. Addressing anti-Semitism on campus requires a nuanced approach that upholds free speech and combats bigotry. While recognizing the need to combat anti-Semitism, enforcing strict speech rules risks stifling debate and breeding resentment. Campus leaders can create task forces and promote open dialogue to counter both anti-Semitism and Islamophobia effectively. upholding free speech, safeguards vulnerable minorities, including Jewish and Palestinian voices, and ensures a diverse and inclusive campus environment.
Well, the nerds think that there's a 50% chance that at least 114,000 U.S. Jews will move to Israel by the year 2050. And that's according to the Metaculous Prediction Community. A top court in Belgium overrules a conservative conference shutdown. Here's the facts as agreed upon by Independent, Guardian, Fox News, The Telegraph, Courthouse News Service, and ABC News. Mayor Emir Kier of Saint-José, a Brussels municipality, on Tuesday ordered police to shut down the National Conservatism Conference to guarantee public safety. After the conference organizers challenged Kier's order, Belgium's Supreme Administration Court ruled that the alleged threat to public safety didn't come from the event, but, quote, the reactions that its organization might provoke among opponents. Kier reportedly made his decision after a group of anti-fascist protesters who had previously harassed the organizers and allegedly forced them to change the venue twice threatened to spoil the conference. Former UK Home Secretary Suella Braverman, former Brexit Party leader Nigel Farage, and Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban, who was scheduled to speak on the second day of the conference, were among the conference speakers. The event resumed on Wednesday, during which Orban criticized the EU for withholding billions of dollars of Hungary's funds, defended Christian nationalist views, and questioned Brussels' decision to sanction Russia after it invaded Ukraine. French right-wing journalist Eric Zemmour, who was scheduled to speak about Europe's migration and asylum issues before police blocked him, also returned on Wednesday. Belgium Prime Minister Alexander De Croo called Tuesday's shutdown unconstitutional.
All right, Adam, the first spin for this story is a right narrative coming from European conservative. In their pursuit of complete control over ideas, liberal European elites think they can censor their way to victory in this summer's elections. Despite the court overruling this blatant violation of free speech, some of these leftist authoritarian leaders, namely Emir Kier in Belgium and the UK's Labour Party, still don't understand the electoral backlash coming this year. As they reveal their disdain for free speech ever more clearly, the citizens of Europe will respond with their vote.
The left narrative is provided by Independent. While the decision to shut down this conference was somewhat understandable, the result has been turning these fringe politicians into martyrs. National conservatives differ on topics such as foreign intervention, but what they all have in common, from the U.S. to Hungary, is discrimination against Muslims, immigrants, and progressives. If their martyr status leads to government power, they will try to outdo each other in oppressing any demographic they deem non-European.
There's a 1% chance that the European Conservatives and Reformists group will hold the most seats after the 2024 European parliamentary elections, and that's according to the Metaculous Prediction Community. Turning our attention back to the United States, as the Biden administration is being sued for allegedly destroying federal records. And here are the facts as agreed upon by the U.S. Attorney's Office of the District of Columbia, America First Legal, Fox News, Washington Examiner, and the United States District Court of the Southern District of Florida. The advocacy group America First Legal, or AFL, has filed a lawsuit against the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Secretary Javier Becerra, U.S. Archivist Colleen Shogan, and the National Archives and Records Administration, or NARA, for allegedly destroying federal records belonging to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, or CDC. The suit claims that despite the Federal Records Act setting a retention period of 3 years for emails of lower-level employees, a Freedom of Information request from AFL revealed that the CDC destroys all lower-level employee emails, quote, 30 days after they leave the agency. AFL's Freedom of Information request in February 2023 had been in relation to records concerning alleged CDC advocacy for what it described as, quote, teacher-led indoctrination of children with racial gender ideology. AFL is led by former Trump advisor Stephen Miller, AFL Vice President Dan Epstein alleged that the lawsuit highlighted the so-called free pass given to other individuals and organizations over their handling of federal documents because, quote, they don't have to stand for election. This comes as Trump himself faces a total of 40 felony charges for allegedly illegally possessing classified documents at his Mar-a-Lago residence that were requested by NARA to be returned following the end of his presidency.
Thank you, Eric. We're going to start the spins with the Republican narrative, and it's brought to us by America First Legal. It's one rule system for the Biden administration and another rule system for Trump, as AFL has once again exposed the two-tiered legal system that continues to ravage America. While the corrupt Department of Justice continues to chase after the former president, the CDC shows no respect for the law and is allowed to mishandle documents as it pleases. This miscarriage of justice must be immediately corrected.
And the Daily Beast has the Democratic narrative. AFL should not be considered a legitimate legal organization, but rather an attention-seeking lawfare body consistently attempting to push its conservative agenda into media headlines. The large majority of AFL cases hold little to no legal grounds whatsoever. Until bad faith entities such as these are punished for their behavior, America's legal system will only continue to be abused.
Eric, the nerds think that there's a 50% chance that Donald Trump's classified documents federal criminal trial will begin by August of 2025.
And that's according to the Metaculous Prediction Community.
Tesla pushes its shareholders for a $56 billion Musk pay deal. Here are the facts as according to BBC News, Guardian, and Axios. Tesla has requested its shareholders to accept awarding CEO Elon Musk with the largest compensation package in American corporate history, estimated to be worth $56 billion. In January, a U.S. judge rejected the offer, calling it, quote, an unfathomable sum. Musk's pay package comes only days after he revealed his intentions to reduce more than 10% of Tesla's global workforce. In a memo to his staff, Musk expressed his regret over the layoffs. Musk's compensation does not include pay or cash bonuses, and the incentive package is based on an expectation that Tesla's market value will rise to $650 billion in the next 10 years. Data shows that Tesla is now worth about $500 billion. In January, Judge Kathleen McCormick of Delaware decided the compensation package was unjust to shareholders. Tesla's board chair Robin Denholm wrote in the regulatory filing that Musk had not been compensated for his work for 6 years. The filing also indicated that Musk receives stock options rather than company pay. Tesla indicated in its filing that, if legally feasible, it would return to the original 2018 compensation package for Musk and put it to a new shareholder vote. Tesla also encouraged investors to endorse its decision to relocate its headquarters from Delaware to Texas.
Adam, thank you for the facts of that story. Narrative A is our first spin. It comes from Business Insider. Nobody works for nothing, so why should Elon Musk? Tesla has not paid Musk since 2018. That's 6 years without compensation, as the electric car firm has broken record after record and is now the world's most valuable corporation. It is only reasonable that the innovative chief executive gets compensated in proportion to the company's performance.
Spin's going to continue with a narrative B provided by Futurism. They say that timing is everything. In this aspect, the struggling car maker failed miserably when it asked shareholders for a record payout to Musk. The suggestion comes just days after Musk announced Tesla will cut 10% of its global workforce, and Tesla's stock has fallen 37% this year. Awarding Musk this much money is not sound. It's excessive, even for Musk.
And the nerds from Metaculous say there's a 50% chance Elon Musk will be the richest person in the world on December 31st, 2025. That's according to the Metaculous Prediction Community.
Oh, you know, he's got that day marked on his calendar.
Well, he's the one that came up with that stat. So, I mean, of course he does. He is Metaculous. Come on, keep up, Adam, keep up. Google fires 28 workers for protesting the $1.2 billion Israel contract. Here are the facts as agreed upon by Bloomberg, ABC News, CNN, NBC, and Verge. Google has fired 28 employees who participated in protests against the company's $1.2 billion contract with the Israeli government and military to provide cloud and AI services. The protests, organized by the group No Tech for Apartheid, took place Tuesday at Google offices in New York City, Seattle, and Sunnyvale, California, with protesters demanding the company to drop its, quote, Project Nimbus contract with Israel. 9 were arrested during the protests on Tuesday. Protesters accused the company of supporting Israeli military action and alleged human rights violations in Gaza. During the protests, employees also protested labor conditions, saying that Project Nimbus had negatively impacted employees' health and safety on the job, and highlighted alleged discrimination against Palestinian, Arab, and Muslim workers at the company. In a memo sent to all Google employees on Wednesday, the company's head of security, Chris Rakow, criticized the protests and warned that the company would take action against those who violate its policies. No Tech for Apartheid has accused Google of retaliatory firing, saying that protesters had participated in a, quote, peaceful sit-in and refusing to leave did not damage property or threaten other workers, and that the company had fired its employees indiscriminately.
Thank you, Eric, for the facts. The spin's going to start with the narrative A, provided by Verge. While Google is aware that Tuesday's protests were the work of a small group of people who do not represent the majority of the company's employees, it's important to note that disruptive behavior has no place in the workplace. Unprofessionalism will not be tolerated, and Google is well within its rights to act against disorderly conduct, up to and including termination.
Narrative B comes from TechCrunch. These firings were illegal and retaliatory, given that the protests were peaceful. Google shouldn't be involved in any military contracts, and Project Nimbus and its association with the catastrophe taking place in Gaza are disturbing. The company clearly cares more about profit than it does about the well-being of its employees or taking an ethical stance on the role of AI in conflict and human rights.
Eric, the nerds think that there's a 72% chance that slaughter bots kill at least 50 people outside a military conflict by 2035. According to the Metaculous Prediction Community, slaughterbots.
Yeah, I've never heard that term, slaughterbots, before.
Are those drones with guns? Is that the flying drones with just unlimited,
I think,
like,
it's probably the AI version of that 90s group Slaughter.
Up all night, sleep all day.
So they're going to have a small concert outside of a military conflict?
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Slaughter.
That's right.
Actor Hugh Grant settles legal disputes with The Sun. Here are the facts as agreed upon by Forbes, Independent, The Hollywood Reporter, and BBC News. British actor Hugh Grant has settled his lawsuit with the News Group Newspapers, or NGN, the Rupert Murdoch-owned parent company of The Sun newspaper. Grant's lawsuit surrounds allegations that the paper put tracking devices in his car, wired his landline phone, and burglarized his home in 2011. He said that while nothing was stolen from his apartment, The Sun detailed its interior the next day. Grant cited civil litigation as the reason he chose to settle, stating that, quote, if I proceed to trial and the court awards me damages that are even a penny less than the settlement offer, I would have to pay the legal costs of both sides. This isn't the first phone hacking settlement Grant has made with NGN, having previously come to an agreement with the now-defunct News of the World, which shut down in 2011 amid scandals including the hacking of a murdered girl's voicemail. With regard to Grant's case, NGN stated that the settlement was reached, quote, without admission of liability, and that avoiding a, quote, costly trial was in both parties' financial interest. This follows Prince Harry's partial legal victory against another tabloid company, Mirror Group, in which the royal received £140,000, or $180,000 in damages. That publisher was also accused of phone hacking, as well as other activities.
Adam, thanks for the facts of that story. Narrative A comes from Guardian. Hugh Grant would have much preferred to go to trial, but UK civil case law makes it impossible. The British media oligarchy has gotten away with this countless times, so the public hasn't gotten to see evidence of their unseemly practices brought before a court. Anyone who has their phone hacked or house burglarized should get justice.
Going to continue the spin with a narrative B provided by Sky News. The allegations surrounding alleged NGN privacy violations date back as far as 20 years ago, and ever since then, the company has apologized to and compensated genuine plaintiffs. Those days are over, however, and the company has cleaned its reporting of these practices. He always looks dapper.
He looks quite dapper.
He's a classy guy. He's got a certain hue about him.
He does, and I grant you that. Nine have been charged in a Canadian gold heist, and here are the facts as agreed upon by Reuters, New York Times, New York Post, CNN, and Barron's. Canadian and U.S. authorities have arrested six suspects, including two Air Canada employees, and charged three others in connection with the 2023 heist of $22 million Canadian dollars, or $16 million U.S. dollars worth of gold bars, and $2.5 million Canadian dollars worth of banknotes. The suspects are accused of stealing a container of 6,600 gold bars from a warehouse at Toronto Pearson Airport after it arrived on an Air Canada flight in April 2023. The container also contained banknotes headed to a Toronto bank for exchange. The two airline employees are Simranpreet Panesar and Parmpal Sidhu, the former having given police a tour of the facility prior to becoming a suspect. Panesar, as well as suspects including Archit Grover, Arsalan Chaudhary, and Durante McLean King, are in U.S. custody. McLean King allegedly used a fake Air Canada way bill to gain access to the holding facility, pretending to pick up a seafood shipment. He then loaded the truck with the valuables and left, after which a Brinks truck showed up with the real way bill. The suspected truck driver was caught in Pennsylvania after being stopped for a traffic violation, during which a state trooper found guns in the car and the suspect fled on foot. Police believe the valuables were stolen to fund illegal arms trafficking into Canada. The authorities claim to have uncovered 430,000 Canadian dollars, or 312,000 U.S. dollars, in profits from selling the gold, as well as six makeshift gold bracelets worth an estimated 89,000 Canadian dollars, or 64,000 U.S. dollars. The whereabouts of the rest of the gold is yet unknown.
Eric, Toronto Sun is going to start the spin with a narrative A. This heist was made possible solely due to it being an inside job. Thanks to those two corrupt airline staff, tens of millions of still unaccounted for dollars were stolen from the country. The gold is likely gone, as some of the criminals allegedly had ties to a jeweler who likely melted it and sold it. While most of the money is gone, the police did a tremendous job on this case.
Supply Chain Brain has narrative B. While this movie-like story involves several villains, an important factor to remember is that Air Canada was in charge of protecting these valuables until an official Brinks truck arrived to pick them up. The airline failed, however, and thus Brinks is suing the airline for being negligent and careless. Air Canada must be scrutinized for its systemic failures in this case.
Our final story today is about the NBA, and they have banned Raptors' Jontay Porter for a gambling scandal. Here are the facts as agreed upon by Associated Press, NBA.com, ESPN, The New York Post, NBC, and CBS. The NBA has banned Toronto Raptors forward Jontay Porter for life on Wednesday after determining that he disclosed confidential information to sports bettors and bet on games, going as far as to bet against his own team. The league issued a statement detailing Porter's violations, noting that he disclosed confidential information about his own health status to an NBA bettor prior to the Raptors' March 20th game, and limited his participation in at least one game to influence the outcome of wagers. Another bettor associated with Porter placed an $80,000 same-game parlay bet on the March 20th game against the Sacramento Kings, wagering that Porter would underperform statistically. He played just 3 minutes, claiming to be sick, and winning the better $101 million. DraftKings Sportsbook flagged and later voided the suspicious wager, prompting the NBA to investigate the unusual activity around Porter on March 25th. Porter also reportedly drew attention when he checked out of a game against the Clippers on January 26th after playing just over 4 minutes. Between January and March of 2024, Porter reportedly placed at least 13 bets while playing with Toronto and its G League affiliate Raptors 905 using an associate's account. He placed bets up to $22,000 and profited nearly $22,000 on just over $54,000 in total wagers. The NBA prohibits anyone affiliated with the league from gambling on any NBA property, and Commissioner Adam Silver said Porter's blatant violations violated the NBA's commitment to upholding the integrity of competition. The investigation is still ongoing.
Adam, thank you for the facts. The first spin is narrative A, coming from Slate. The NBA had no choice but to swiftly and decisively ban Jonte Porter for life after he committed one of the professional sport's cardinal sins. As many states legalize sports betting, there are massive profits to be made as leagues partner with officially recognized books. However, this opens the doors to players who cannot resist the temptation to place wagers of their own. This is a difficult situation to manage, but the NBA has sent a clear message that any violation of its gambling rules will not be tolerated. The league knows that its entire reputation is on the line, and it will not allow gambling to destroy its competitive integrity.
The Ringer's providing us with a narrative B. While Jonte Porter clearly deserves to be punished for his actions, it's important to note how the NBA opened the door for him, and potentially other players, to gamble on games. Sports betting is a multi-billion dollar industry that leagues cannot wait to tap into. Within the past few years, the NBA has partnered with books and encouraged fans to bet on the league. The NBA had to know that the ubiquity of betting would ultimately trickle down to the players, yet it still pushed to grow its gambling presence. The NBA made an example out of Porter, but the league is not blameless in this scandal.
And the nerds from Metaculous say there's a 32% chance that the Boston Celtics will win the 2024 NBA Finals. Thanks for listening to the Verity Podcast for Friday, April 19th, 2024.
Each day we use machine learning to read about 5,000 articles from about 100 newspapers and figure out which ones are about the same stories. For each major story, our editorial team then extracts both the key facts that all articles agree on and the key narratives where the articles differ.
Find out more at Verity.news and download the Verity app on the Apple App Store or Google Play. For Adam Clark, I'm Eric Steiner, inviting you to join us next time on the Verity Podcast.